Hey guys, this is Vyom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Today we will be talking about a stock that was suggested by a subscriber. That stock is Advanced Micro Devices, also known as AMD. Today we will be reviewing AMD's operating segments, look at the company's key ratios, perform a discounted free cash flow DCF analysis to find the intrinsic value of the company, do an expected rate of return calculation to see if we were to invest in the security at the current stock price, what kind of return can we expect on this investment? And finally, we will be reviewing the arbitrage opportunity that is available with the upcoming merger. So let's dive in and review AMD. Hey guys, let's start off by looking at the Form 10-K, which is the annual report that AMD filed with the SEC. This is for the fiscal year that ended December 26, 2020. And on page 77 of this report, the company talks about the operating segments. It states that it has two reportable segments. The first one is the computing and graphics segment, which primarily includes desktop and notebook processors and chipsets, discrete and integrated graphics processing units, GPUs, data center and professional GPUs and development services. It states that from time to time, the company may also sell or license portions of its intellectual property portfolio. Second is the enterprise, embedded and semi-custom segment, which primarily includes server and embedded processors, semi-custom system-on-chip products, development services, and technology for game consoles. Similar to the previous segment, the company also states that from time to time, the company may also sell or license portions of its intellectual property portfolio. AMD says that in addition to these two reportable segments, the company also has an all other category, which primarily includes employee stock-based compensation expenses. After that, AMD breaks down the net revenue and operating income across each segment for the years 2018, 2019, and 2020. Net revenue is the amount of money that the company makes from sales. And for the year 2020, about 66% of the company's net revenue came from its computing and graphics segment. Over the past 3 years, the computing and graphics segment has seen a greater growth than the enterprise, embedded, and semi-custom segment. Next is the operating income. The operating income is the amount of money that's left with the company once it has paid for the cost of goods and other operating expenses. We can see that the computing and graphics segment has a greater operating margin than that of the enterprise, embedded, and semi-custom segment. About 19% of the company's net revenue brought in from its computing and graphics segment actually becomes the operating income for that segment. The operating income for both the segments over the past 3 years have been increasing. And finally, the company has the all other segment, which is a $288 million loss. The company then breaks down how that $288 million operating loss was derived. And as the company stated before, majority of the company's total operating loss over the years has come from the stock-based compensation expense. On the next page, the company summarizes sales to external customers by geographic regions. For the year 2020, United States and China accounted for about 50% of the company's total sales. And finally, AMD breaks down its property and equipment by geographic areas. As of December 26, 2020, 85% of the company's total property and equipment was located in the United States and Canada. Now that we have a better understanding about AMD's operating segments, let's review the key ratios to better understand the business fundamentals. Hey guys, now let's review AMD's key ratios. I'm on Morningstar looking at AMD. Under key ratios, we have the financials. The first item on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that the company brings in from its sales. Back in 2011, the company brought in about $6.5 billion. And for the year 2020, it brought in about $9.7 billion. When we look at the 10-year trend, we can see that the revenue dropped down all the way down to $3.9 billion in 2015. However, since 2015, we can see that the top line has been growing. Next is the operating income. The operating income is the amount of money that's left with the company once AMD has paid for its cost of goods and its operating expenses. Back in 2011, AMD's operating income was about $466 million, and for the year 2020, it was $1.3 billion. Over the past 10 years, back in 2012, 2015, and 2016, the operating income was negative. This indicates that the company's cost of goods and its operating expenses exceeded the amount of money that was brought in via sales, causing its operating income to turn negative. After that, looking at the net income is the bottom line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that's left with the company once it has paid for its cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes. Back in 2012, the company's net income was $491 million, and for the year 2020, it was about $2.5 billion. When we look at the past 10-year trend, we can see that from 2012 all the way through 2016, the company reported a loss. However, ever since 2017, the company has reported positive net income, which has been growing every year.
Next is the dividends. We can see that AMD does not pay out any dividends. This goes to show that the management thinks that it's more efficient and productive to reinvest the company's capital in its core business rather than departing from that money and giving it to the existing shareholders in the form of dividends. After that, looking at the shares outstanding, back in 2011, AMD had 742 million shares outstanding, and for the year 2020, it had about 1,207 million shares outstanding. Ideally, we want to invest in companies whose shares outstanding number is going down. In other words, we want to invest in companies that are buying back its shares because that increases the existing shareholders' ownership within the company. However, that is not the case with AMD. As we can see, AMD has been issuing more shares every year since 2012, and this dilutes the existing shareholders' ownership within the company. Next, looking at the book value per share. The book value is what we get when we subtract the company's total liabilities from its total assets. Back in 2011, AMD's book value was about $2.5 per share, and for the trailing 12 months, that number is $4.82 per share. Over the past 10 years, there was one year when company's book value was negative. This means that in 2015, the company had more liabilities than assets. Ever since 2016, the company's book value has been increasing. Finally, looking at the free cash flow. The free cash flow is what we get when we subtract capital spending from the company's operating cash flow. Back in 2011, AMD's free cash flow was $132 million, and for the year 2020, it was $777 million. Ideally, we want to invest in companies whose free cash flow is positive, steady, or increasing. I will be using the past 10 years of free cash flow for my expected rate of return calculation, and I will be using the 2020 figure of $777 million for my DCF discounted free cash flow analysis. Next, look at the profitability of the company, focusing on the net margin. The net margin compares the company's bottom line to its top line, so it is comparing the net income to the revenue. Back in 2011, AMD's net margin was at 7.48%, and for the year 2020, it's at 25.50%. AMD's net margin from 2012 through 2016 was negative, because back then its net income was negative. However, ever since 2017, the company's net margin has been positive, and for the year 2020, what this means is every $100 that the company made in sales, by the time it paid for all its expenses, cost of goods, operating, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, taxes, it had $25.50 left as pure profit. After that, looking at the return on equity, the return on equity compares the company's net income to its shareholders' equity. Warren Buffett prefers to only invest in securities that have had a return on equity of 8% or greater every year for the past 10 years. Back in 2011, AMD's return on equity was at 37.73%, and for the year 2020, it was at 57.48%. We can see that AMD's return on equity has been greater than 8% since 2017. Next, looking at the return on invested capital. The return on invested capital gives an idea of how good the management is at allocating the company's capital and getting a return on that investment. Ideally, we want to see the return on invested capital to be much greater than the company's cost of capital. Back in 2011, AMD's return on invested capital was at 17%, and for the year 2020, it's about 51%. AMD's weighted average cost of capital right now is about 13%, and when we see that the return on invested capital is about 51%, we can be certain that the management is being efficient and effective at allocating the company's capital and getting a return on that investment. Finally, looking at the interest coverage. The interest coverage gives us an idea of how many times can the company pay off its interest obligations using its income in that calendar year. Back in 2011, the company could pay off its interest obligations about one time, and for the year 2020, it could pay off its interest obligations about 28 times. Benjamin Graham preferred to only invest in securities that had an interest coverage of 5 times or greater. Now let's look at the financial health of the company. The first item on the list is the current ratio. The current ratio compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. Ideally, we want to invest in companies that have a current ratio of 1.0. It's even better if it's greater than 1.5. Back in 2011, the company's current ratio was at 1.82, and for the latest quarter, it's at 2.54. Next is the quick ratio. The quick ratio is similar to the current ratio, except we disregard the inventory component. In other words, quick ratio is equal to current assets minus inventory divided by current liabilities. Ideally, we want to invest in companies that have a quick ratio of greater than 1, as this indicates that the company does not have to rely on selling its inventory in order to stay liquid. Back in 2011, the company's quick ratio was at 1.51, and for the latest quarter, it's at 1.81. It's good to see that the company's current ratio every year for the past 10 years has been greater than 1.5. Similarly, the quick ratio every year for the past 10 years has been greater than a 1.0, except that 1 year in 2015. Next, looking at the financial leverage. The financial leverage is the ratio of the company's total assets to its shareholders' equity. A higher financial leverage ratio means that the company is financing more of its assets by using liabilities such as debt. Back in 2011, the company's financial leverage was at 3.12, and it grew all the way to 20.14 back in 2014. However, ever since 2016, the company's financial leverage has been decreasing, and for the year 2020, it's at 1.54. Finally, looking at the debt-to-equity ratio, this ratio compares the company's total debt to its shareholders' equity. Ideally, we want to invest in companies that have a debt-to-equity ratio of less than 1. It's even better if it's less than 0.5. Back in 2011, the company's debt-to-equity ratio was at 0.96, and it grew all the way to 10.88 back in 2014. However, ever since 2016, the company's debt-to-equity ratio has been decreasing. For the year 2020, it's at 0.09. AMD's most recent financial leverage and debt-to-equity ratios are in fact a little bit better than its competitors such as Intel and Nvidia. Now let's look at the efficiency ratios for the company. The first item on the list is the day sales outstanding. This number gives an idea of how many days go by from the day the company recognizes its sales to the day it actually receives cash for that service rendered. Back in 2011, the company's day sales outstanding was at 52 days. It dropped all the way to 24 days back in 2017. And for the year 2020, it's about 73 days. Ideally, we want to see the company's day sales outstanding number to be staying steady or decreasing. However, since 2017, the company's day sales outstanding number have been increasing. This means that the company is being more aggressive with its accounting tactics by recognizing the sales quicker, which artificially inflates the company's top line number. Next, looking at the day's inventory. This number gives an idea of how many days does AMD's product sit in its inventory before they're sold. Back in 2011, AMD's product sat in its inventory for about 56 days, and for the year 2020, it sat in its inventory for about 80 days. Over the past 10 years, the company's days inventory have hovered from a low of about 45 days to a high of about 86 days. Next, looking at the payables period, this number gives an idea of how many days does the company take to pay its suppliers. Back in 2011, the company took about 56 days to pay its suppliers, and for the year 2020, it's about 50 days. Over the past 10 years, the company's payables period has stayed fairly consistent, except that one year back in 2019, when it jumped all the way to about 72 days. Finally, looking at the inventory turnover, this number gives an idea of how many times does AMD's inventory go through its system in a calendar year. Back in 2011, AMD's inventory went through about 6.55 times, and for the year 2020, it's about 4.55 times. AMD's inventory turnover has been fairly consistent since 2013, as it has hovered between 4 to 5 times. Finally, let's compare the company's current valuation to that of the S&P 500. S&P 500 is the aggregate of the top 500 companies in the United States. The first item on the list is the price-to-earnings ratio. AMD's PE is at 45.5, whereas S&P 500 is at 27.4. Next, price-to-book. AMD's price-to-book is at 19.5, whereas S&P 500 is at 4.0. Price-to-sales, AMD is at 11.6, whereas S&P 500 is at 2.8. After that, price-to-cash flow, AMD is at 105.7, whereas S&P 500 is at 16.3. And finally, the dividend yield. AMD does not have a dividend yield because it does not pay a dividend. However, S&P 500's dividend yield is at 1.7%. We can see that on all these valuation metrics, AMD is overvalued when compared to the S&P 500. Hey guys, now let's look at the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis for AMD. Over here, I pasted the 2020 free cash flow number that I got from Morningstar, which is at $777 million. I'm using the annual growth rate of free cash flow to be 15%. What this means is I expect AMD's free cash flow to grow at 15% every year for the first 10 years. I'm using a discount rate of 13%. What this means is I want this investment to give me a 13% return. I'm using 13% because that is the current weighted average cost of capital for AMD. In other words, this is the hurdle rate that AMD has to meet or surpass in order to create shareholder value. I'm using the long-term growth rate to be 8%. What this means is I expect AMD's free cash flow to grow at 8% every year from the 10-year mark into perpetuity. The company has 1,207 million shares outstanding and has $330 million in its long-term debt. After taking all of these inputs into account, we get the intrinsic value to be about $23.69 per share. When we compare this to the current stock price of about $93.77 per share, we can see that if we were to purchase the security at the current stock price, we would be paying a premium of about 4 times the intrinsic value. The way we derive this intrinsic value is we look at what the free cash flows would be every year for the next 10 years. We sum up all those free cash flows, which come out to about $8.5 billion. Then we look at what the free cash flows would be from the 10-year mark into perpetuity. We sum all those up to get the intrinsic value to be about $28.9 billion. From this number, we subtract the long-term debt and divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value per share to be about $23.69. Now, if we disregard the perpetuity component, in other words, if you think that AMD's free cash flow will only grow for the next 10 years, then the intrinsic value without the perpetuity component comes out to about $6.83 per share. If we disregard both the perpetuity and the long-term debt, then we get the intrinsic value without the debt and the perpetuity to be about $7.10 per share. And lastly, if we drop this intrinsic value to 10%, in other words, if we expect to just get a 10% return on this investment, then we get the intrinsic value to be about $64.70 per share. Now, if we drop the discount rate even further to 9%, we can see that the intrinsic value comes out to about $134 per share, which when we compare it to the current stock price would indicate that the current stock is actually trading at a discount. Again, this hurdle rate of 9% is much lower than the company's cost of capital, which is at 13%. And as shareholders, it is important for you to recognize that the company has to at least meet or surpass the hurdle rate, which is at 13%, in order to create shareholder value. Hey guys, now let's look at the expected rate of return calculation for AMD. Over here, I pasted the past 10 years of free cash flows that I got from Morningstar. All the numbers here are in millions of US dollars. This is the yearly free cash flow trend that we get over the years. We can see that the free cash flow has been positive since 2019. Next, looking at the future data and predictions, I'm assuming that there's a 35% likelihood that AMD's free cash flow will grow at 30%, a 50% likelihood that its free cash flow will grow at 12%, and a 15% likelihood that its free cash flow will grow at 2%. These are the potential free cash flow rays that we get into the future. After taking into account the numbers of shares outstanding, which is 1,207 million shares, at the current stock price of about $93.77 per share, we can expect to get a return of about 0.3% on this investment. What this means is, if you were to purchase a share of AMD at the current stock price of about $93.77 per share and hold it through 2060, we can expect to get a return of about 0.3% on that investment. Hey guys, before we end, I wanted to quickly go over note 18 of the 10K annual report where AMD talks about its pending acquisition. Over here, AMD talks about its merger with Xilinx, where it states that each share of common stock of Xilinx will be converted into the right to receive 1.7234 shares of AMD stock. Anytime there is a merger or acquisition, there appears to be an arbitrage opportunity that is created, and that is the case in this situation. Xilinx's current stock price is $145.75 per share. The cost of one share of AMD after the merger would be $84.57 per share, as compared to the current stock price of AMD, which is at $93.77 per share. What this means is, after the merger, you would have theoretically bought the share of AMD at $84.57 per share. At that point, you can go sell that stock in the current market at $93.77 per share, creating a profit of about $9 per share for yourself. Again, this is just an example, as the current stock price of both the securities can be vastly different at the time of the merger, and the arbitrage opportunity and the profit or loss that may be created may be vastly different at the time of the merger. It is also important to note that this is an all-share transaction. In other words, AMD will be issuing a lot more shares in order to pay for this merger, which inherently will dilute AMD's existing shareholders' ownership within the company. Finally, the fact that this is an all-share transaction means that AMD's management thinks that AMD's stock is overvalued. Because if the current stock price was undervalued, AMD's management would have used cash for this transaction rather than stock. In other words, AMD would have overpaid for this investment if its management thought that its current stock was undervalued. For example, if you are the CEO of a company and you think that your company is worth $100, but it's currently trading at $50, it would not make sense for you to issue shares at $50 per share. However, if your shares are currently trading at $200 per share, then it would make perfect sense to pay for any investment using your shares. In short, AMD's management, who has AMD's shareholders' best interest in mind, thinks that AMD's stock is overvalued. Hey guys, now let's wrap it all up. We saw that AMD's revenue, operating income, and net income have been increasing every year since 2017. The company does not pay out any dividends, as it prefers to reinvest its money into its core business. The return on equity has been greater than 8% every year since 2017, and the return on invested capital for 2020 has been greater than the company's cost of capital. The interest coverage has been greater than 5 times for the year 2020. Next, when we looked at the liquidity ratios, we saw that the current and the quick ratio indicated that the company had enough current assets to fulfill its current liabilities. AMD's financial leverage and debt to equity ratio have improved over the past few years. In fact, the 2020 numbers are better than its competitors such as Intel and Nvidia. After that, when we looked at the efficiency ratios, we saw that the company's day sales outstanding number have been increasing, which means that the company is more aggressive at recognizing its revenue, which artificially inflates the company's income. Next, we compared AMD's current valuation to that of S&P 500 and saw that on all the valuation metrics, AMD was overvalued to the S&P 500. When we performed the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis, we found that the intrinsic value of AMD comes out to about $24 per share. And when we compared that to the current stock price of about $93.77 per share, we can see that the current stock is trading about 4 times the company's intrinsic value. After that, we performed the expected rate of return calculation and found that if we were to invest in this security at the current stock price, we can expect to get a return of about 0.3% on this investment. Finally, when we looked at the pending acquisition section of the 10K annual report, we saw that AMD is merging with Xilinx through an all-share transaction, and that process is creating arbitrage opportunity for investors. Additionally, since this is an all-share transaction, we can safely say that AMD's management thinks that AMD's stock is overvalued. In conclusion, AMD's fundamentals have improved over the past few years, but it is overvalued and lacks the margin of safety. As a value investor, I would be more likely to partake in the arbitrage opportunity where I would be buying shares of Xilinx rather than AMD at the current stock price. Mergers and acquisitions are uncertain, and if you were to partake in this arbitrage opportunity and the merger does not go through, then you may be left with shares of Xilinx rather than AMD. So it is important to do your due diligence on each security before investing in it. Hey guys, that is all I have for you this week. Hopefully you found this video on AMD interesting. If you like this content, please do like, share, comment, and subscribe to my channel. And if you have any suggestions as to which stock I should review next, please leave it in the comment section below. I will greatly appreciate it. Thank you.